Welcome, everybody. I'm Jonathan Gertler. I'm the CEO and managing partner of Back Bay Life Science Advisors and also part of the DNB Back Bay Partnership for Healthcare, of which we're so proud to be a part. I'm here today with two colleagues from DNB and one colleague from Back Bay. From DNB, Jim Sorenza, as well as Christopher Broughton, and from Back Bay Life Science Advisors, Vasilio Kofitsis, all in the investment banking and markets groups for both organizations. We're delighted to be hosting this podcast on the IPO outlook in 2024, certainly a topic that's on the front of everyone's mind as the markets seem to be returning and as healthcare, as always, creates a dominant part of our economy and our contribution really on a global level. So welcome. I do want to state a disclaimer, which is, as always, please refer to the show notes for links and for important disclaimers. And welcome to Jim, Christopher, and Vasilios. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Adam.
Always a pleasure. So let's cut right to the chase here. We all have been around this world for a very long time, and we've all seen numerous cycles. And we always get the questions during those cycles, my goodness, is it ever going to come back? But of course, it always does. We've had quite the dormant period after a very great happiness for about a decade in the healthcare markets. And what we're going to discuss today is the activity to date in 2024. What does it mean for companies on a global level that are focusing on the United States? What about companies in the United States that look to Europe? What about European companies? We'll touch on that as well. Our expectations, and of course, our advice for companies that are contemplating the public markets. So with that, let's just jump in. I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves in terms of your specific activities, and then we'll move right to the meat of the content of the podcast. So Christopher, let's start with you, please.
So my name is Christopher Broughton. I work in DNB Markets here in New York and heading up our U.S. equity capital markets team, and been with DNB for 12 years.
Terrific. And Vasilios?
Hello, everyone. Vasilios Kofitsis, Managing Director on the investment banking side of Back Bay, focused on corporate and transactional strategies, and then the execution for M&A licensing partnering, and together with our partners here, increasingly a lot more on the capital market side. Nice to meet you all.
Great. And Jim?
Hi, I'm Jim Sorenza. I've been with DNB for 12 years. I'm responsible for the equity and fixed income sales force, and I spend a large percentage of my time working with Christopher on the ECM transactions.
Great. And one thing I do want to mention, this is actually the first in a series of podcasts around the IPO markets, and they will include many things, including logistics, mechanics, ongoing tracking of cycles, strategic approaches, etc. But for this one, let's start in with the start to 2024. Jim, it's been a strong start. Both the S&P 500 and NASDAQ are at really all-time highs. And what's your sense of the current state of the broader capital markets at this point? Let's give everybody the overview.
Listen, it's very different than last year. Last year, we had an S&P that finished the year up 25%, but 491 companies more or less did nothing last year. This year, things have certainly broadened out. The recent IPOs year to date are up about 10%. Healthcare activity within the IPO market and follow-on equity market have picked up a lot. Last year, there was only $3 billion worth of healthcare IPOs in the U.S. and $30 billion of secondary follow-on offerings. We're already more than half that pace after the first quarter of this year. And although the performance of these IPOs have been mixed, the market has been much more open so far.
We agree. And so, Christopher, do you want to comment a little bit about the IPO performance to date and what your insights are as to why it has been the way it has been?
Yeah, sure. So, and just to point it out, so of the 30 US IPOs that's priced in the first quarter, in terms of activity level, that's similar to Q1 last year. But if you look at the proceeds raised, which is about 8 billion, that's three times as high as last year. So it's a really good start and much better sentiment to raise capital. And this comes out in the form of larger transactions coming to the market and actually performing quite well. So you see that investors want to have sizable companies with good liquidity. And if you then look at the top 15 IPOs that have raised more than $100 million, they have actually averaged a return of 24% up since the offer price. So it's a strong start to the year, and I hope this will continue.
So Christopher and Jim, let me ask you both something, because during the 10-year very up cycle, as is always the case, toward the end of the cycle, we saw a lot of generalist investors coming in. We saw an enormous amount of fund flow. And frankly, I think sometimes that exuberance and that excess of capital is actually what ultimately ends up creating the down markets that follow and then could be so devastating for companies seeking capitalization. Can you comment both a little bit about the characteristics of the investors that are coming into these IPOs, and also with regard to sustainability, their long interest, really their fundamental knowledge of the space? Do you see it as different, or do you see it as still a broad influx of capital?
To begin with, it hasn't been a broad influx of capital. The active managers have suffered something like 210 consecutive weeks of redemptions. So the focus back on the IPO market and the focus away from just the Magnificent Seven and the tech sector, that has certainly broadened out. And so you look at what happened to the broader market and to the healthcare market through the end of October of last year, you know, the performance coming off that bottom has forced people to look more broadly and to invest more broadly. So we are seeing a larger generalist pool back in these names again, but it's not because their assets under management are exploding. It's just because these sectors suffered too much too long.
But if I'm not mistaken, Jim, I think the implication as well is that although they're generalist investors coming in, there's still a fundamental movement back to healthcare because of the primary attractiveness of the sector, not because there's an irrational exuberance, to coin a phrase that's been coined before, over the sector itself.
It's not irrational yet, not even close.
Terrific. Christopher, do you want to comment on that as well?
Yeah, I will just say that this is more the characteristic of a start of a cycle, where you see the large cap or the larger IPOs being, you know, well received. But then, you know, as further we go into the cycle, we will typically also see that the bit smaller IPOs also do quite well. And then you would see investors and the more generous investors coming in, accepting, you know, lower liquidity. So I think this is a much more of the start of the cycle. And I also see when interest rates might have peaked in Q1 and we are on a decelerating trend, I think that will add more capital into the healthcare sector, and especially biotech and medtech.
Terrific. So Vasilios, I want to turn to you for a moment, and really a two-part question. The first one's really going to be about characteristics of companies that are well-suited to go public. And by that, we mean not only can create a financing events, but have sustainability in terms of aftermarket performance in the markets themselves. And then as a second part of it, and I'll ask it separately, but I do want to delve into a little bit the role of partnering in preparation for or as a public company for both biotechs as well as potentially for some of the other sectors in healthcare. But let's start with your view of the characteristics of companies that are best suited not only to have a successful offering, but to be successful after the offering, which is, of course, most critically important.
Sure. And allow me to start maybe with the more obvious first, and I can get into some of the more recent IPOs and their characteristics as well. I mean, it always starts and ends with a story, and being able to communicate the value proposition. And to the point of investor criticism, input, et cetera. So meaning, get your story out there well before you're planning for an IPO, get in front of as many investors as possible. Jim, I think I'm echoing you on our last podcast on that front. Obviously, the management team needs to be ready for prime time. There's going to be a lot at you being a public company, not only talking to investors, but pre-IPO, but also after the IPO. And of course, the concept of news flow, right? Being able to list publicly, you really need over the following 18 to 36 months, continuous news flow, or else you'll get into this place where it's going to, you know, potentially get into microcap purgatory because there's no catalyst to propel the stock. Looking at some of the more recent IPOs, especially since the beginning of 23, about 80 or 90% of them are phase two or later. So there's a risk adversity in this environment still. When you look at all the IPOs that have priced. Another thing that's striking is the size of these IPOs. And Christopher, you brought this up a little bit earlier. If you look at the mean size of the IPOs done in the major exchanges in US and the EU, it's about 380 million. Now that includes Galderma, which we know was pretty massive. But even if you take that out, it's close to 300 million in mean size. So these are still high funding events for these companies. And so being able to tell the story of what you are going to be able to do with such proceeds to investors. And then finally, and this is consistent with the discussions we're having with companies that we're actively in dialogue with regarding capital markets activities, the need to have a sound investor, institutional and sophisticated investor base prior to IPO. So as a company, you're thinking about potentially crossover rounds or the round right before an IPO, ensuring that investor mix is the right one that will help support the company in the aftermarket. And Jonathan, to your second point, in terms of sustainability in the market, you know, looking at the performances, and Christopher, you brought this up to a certain extent, it's really the aftermarket performance really a haves and have nots. You'll see companies double digits up and others double digit down. And it's really unclear why A versus B for some of these companies. But at the end of the day, the cover is always important, right? You're going to need somebody that's going to able to place the stock appropriately, but you're also going to need the co-managers that are going to support you in the aftermarket with, again, not only bringing in new investors to the opportunity, whether being European investors, which we know as a group here are stable, sophisticated investors that can help support U.S. equities, and making sure that the research coverage follows. So it's the constant support from your core managers and Wall Street. And of course, from the corporate perspective, it is the news flow, right? What are the key inflection points that are going to be coming up in the foreseeable future to really propel the story?
Vasilios, let me bring up a point that you made a couple of months ago, looking at the performance, the aftermarket performance of those companies that had a well-respected anchor investor as part of their launch.
Yeah, and I think that actually, let me expand on that a little bit as well. I think, first of all, we're obviously primarily talking about biotech public markets in this conversation. I think it's really just worth noting that although there's intermittently health tech and med tech public markets, those are usually really for companies that are fundamentally commercially sound. And I think we'll probably devote a whole other discussion to the med tech and health tech space on a subsequent podcast. But let's focus on biotech. You use the term risk averse in noting that a lot of the companies are phase two or beyond. I would actually say risk rational in many ways. And in that case, you know, if you look at biotech drug development, risk of failure, broad platforms, the expense of broad platforms, when you're well, you know, before even phase one necessarily or even in phase one, the risk of failure is so profound that it has to take an extremely supportive public market to have people then view that sustainably. So I think it is a risk rational market. And it also, you know, really reinforces the point that going public is not a trivial event. And because of all the things we're talking about, going public should really coincide with the news flow you've mentioned, with the predictability perhaps of the data you have in hand and the data you're expecting, and therefore the financial risk that is associated with being public and the cost associated with being public is then more mitigated than it would be for an earlier stage company. But Christopher, let me ask you a question as well, and Vasilios and Jim, your observations of the companies that have gone public and the split between the haves and the have-nots, there's both the institutional investor presence and probably also the potential of the platform versus a more single asset oriented value proposition. Christopher, can you comment on that?
Yeah, because it's been in a quite wide range of companies being listed now in Q1, and then some are larger on a platform with multiple assets under development and or have been commercialized, and other are more specialized, single-focused companies. So it's a bit, it's a good mix of it, but I think it comes down to the quality of the asset or the asset base. And in order to have a successful IPO, you need to then make sure that the anchor investors and the specialist investors buys into that story.
And I would add also that it's not the biggest market that will make you the successful IPO. It is actually the best execution in a targeted way, commensurate with the technology or the asset or a platform that you're offering up. And in the last couple of minutes here, let me shift to one other conversation, which is the correlation between the European and the American markets. I think frequently the European markets, whether it's France or Switzerland or the Nordics, where we know them so well, Stockholm, Oslo, Copenhagen, tend to follow the American markets. But there are real opportunities for non-U.S. companies also to come over to the U.S. market. So starting with that one, Jim, can you comment a little bit about the accessibility of the U.S. markets to non-U.S.-based companies at this time?
Yeah, and I'll go back to your comment about risk rational, because I think that's a good place to start. If a company fits into the category of risk rational, you know, stage two or later, the size of the average size of the transaction being in the hundreds of millions of dollars, that is the kind of, that's the kind of size and phase of development that's attractive to U.S. investors. And what we've seen over the course of the last couple of years and what we've seen over the course of many years now is companies that, large companies, growing companies that come to the U.S. tend to, over time, get a better valuation. But I think it starts with being fitting that camp of being risk rational.
Terrific. So let me ask a little bit about the state of the European markets for European companies, European broadly, including Nordics and the rest of Western Europe. Christopher, can you comment about where you see those markets in terms of following or leading the U.S. public markets? And then we'll close with just a little bit of advice from all present for companies contemplating this route.
Yeah, so in the Europe, we have seen a strong start to the year with 23 IPOs having been priced in Q1 2024, having raised 5.5 billion euro in proceeds. And that's actually the best quarter for IPO proceeds raised since Q3 2022. So I think it's a strong start, but it also is impacted by several, you know, larger deals coming to the market. So in terms of deal count, it's actually not that impressive. But we have seen some good examples of recent IPOs, including the skincare company Galderma, which raised a fairly large amount in European standard, which was 2.3 billion Swiss franc. And then the company then priced IPO at the top end of the range. And then at the end of yesterday, it's up more than 20%. And the dynamics in the European IPO markets are quite different from the US, as here you have a larger retail base and you have a much larger, I would say, hedge fund base where you could bid up the IPOs from the start of or following pricing. Well, that's much less developed in the European region. So 20% increase of a large IPO like that is actually very, very strong historically.
Terrific. So I think we're coming up on time. Christopher, we'll let you continue to talk for a moment and ask if you have just a word of counsel for companies, European or U.S., contemplating the IPO route, what you would suggest is the most important thing that they might consider, and then we'll go around the podcast here for the same advice.
Yeah, sure. So I will just say that, you know, timing the sentiment in the markets, it's proven to be very challenging. So if you are contemplating an IPO this year or next year, I think, you know, one good advice will be to start early to get the, you know, accountants and then your legal advisors lined up, and also the lead investment banks, so that when you're done with the preparations, then you could pretty much go to the market. And while you're also doing, you know, this simultaneously, you should need to make sure to have some discussions with some lead anchor investors, and then, you know, go to the market when the sentiment is there, but do the preparation prior to it.
Terrific. Vasilios?
Sure. And I'll touch on something you mentioned earlier, Jonathan, around as you think about partnering strategies relative to IPO. U.S. investors want go-it-alone strategies. They want the issuers to retain as much of the value as possible. Hence, some of these rounds, as you can see how large they are, investors have no issues and have had no issues so far funding large rounds to be able to achieve the key inflection points over time. So the key message there is retain as much value in your lead asset or assets if you're considering an IPO in the U.S.
Terrific. And yes, thanks for reminding me to get back to the partnering question. Jim.
And another thing to consider is the U.S. market, whether it's the U.S. market or the European market in terms of where you list, your investment audience is on both sides of the ocean. You know, you need to spend time marketing to the U.S. investors. You need to spend time marketing to the European investors. I mean, part of the logic for D&B and Back Bay to join is to give us credibility and to give us credibility both in the U.S. and in Europe. To us, it's an important step. And to have someone like D&B, Back Bay, involved in these transactions gives you the best fighting chance of having distribution everywhere.
And the privilege of being moderator is I get to close. And I would say the last point, and perhaps, Jim, this reflects your comments about the D&B Back Bay partnership, is critical to all of this is an extraordinarily detailed and fundamental preparation around what the company's inflection points are, what its value proposition is, to be able to completely, from molecule to market, control the debate with investors so that you are out there with the most information, demonstrating your mastery of the company in whichever market at which you're aiming. So with that, I will thank everybody for listening in. More to come, and we so look forward to being with you again on our next podcast, both about the IPO markets and IPO mechanics, but also Above and Beyond and the other podcasts to follow in this series. Thanks so much, Jim, Vasilios, Christopher, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.